Let me take you back to our first night in 1 Corinthians many months ago. We said this is a church in Corinth, one with crazy problems. Though we also said it reminds us a lot of London. And I asked us if we could separate then the symptoms from the root causes, and also for any ideas about Paul's solution in the letter. That was the very first discussion we had together. And what I want to do now is bring us back to the suggestion I made then about where you find these things in the letter. And I said then we'd see whether you still agreed with me after we'd studied the book in detail, which is what you've now done through the year. So you should have a handout sheet that looks familiar from that beginning, except that I have filled in all the blanks now with what I think. So I think the structure goes like this. Chapters 1 to 4 is about the root cause, which is that they are in this for themselves. That relates, doesn't it, to their insecurity, to pride, which is a form of self-glorification. They're in this for themselves. And the worked example in those chapters is factions. I follow Paul, I follow Apollos. And the practical application there was stop boasting in your leaders in order to make yourself feel better. Then the book separates into sections that are each about a different worked example. We have sex in chapters 5 to 7. And Paul said, no, your body is there to glorify God. It's not yours. It's not for you. In 8 to 10, it was about rights. And Paul said, no, your freedom is to save others. It's not yours. It's not for you. And then 11 to 14 was about church. And Paul said, no, your gifts, they are to build others up. They're not yours. They're not for you. And that means that chapter 15 is then the solution to all the problems. And that is back to front compared to all Paul's other letters. The solution is at the end, the heavy lifting, the doctrine, the theology is at the end. And chapter 15, by the time we get there, we've gone through all these problems and Paul keeps saying to them, not yours, not for you. You can't do with that whatever you want. I think the big question in their head is why bother? Why bother with all these things, Paul, that you're saying? If sex and human rights and gifts and the leaders we choose and how we behave in the law court and the food we eat at church, why bother with all of that if it costs us, if it's hard for us, hurts us? And in fact, you could say Corinth is the church that stopped bothering. So let's just stop bothering with anything about the Christian life that is painful and difficult, and let's see what happens a couple of years later. They are the not bothered church. And verse 58 of chapter 15, briefly said, tells them to bother. Chapter 15 is the reason why they should bother with standing firm and the hard work, the labour. So you'll see I've put on the sheet the solution, chapter 15, sacrifice now, because of better bodies in the future. And then chapter 16 that you've just looked at is the practical worked example. It's lots about love, it's lots about money, and it's lots about those who do the work of the Lord, meaning Paul and his team and others in terms of bringing the gospel to other people. And that means that chapter 15 and 16 ties together lots of very important ideas. And we can have a go now at what the whole book is about. And you'll see I've put there a theme. And the big subject of the book is that the future is Christ's risen body. So lots of the letter is about caring about the future more than you care about now. In fact, lots of the Bible is about that. Book of Proverbs, for instance, lots and lots of the Bible. It's about Christ, not about me. The future is not me. The future is Christ's risen body. It's about risen as opposed to floaty, spiritual. Risen is a physical, concrete word. And it's about body. That's the push in chapter 6 in terms of my body will be owned by Jesus, is owned, has a future for him. It's chapter 11 where my body is the other Christians. Chapter 12, my body is the other Christians, as well as about Jesus' own resurrection body and our place in it. And then the aim of the whole letter is that we sacrifice now for the sake of that body. If the future is Christ's risen body, then the right response now is to sacrifice for its sake, for his sake. And verse 58 of chapter 15 sounds just really reasonable and English and calm, doesn't it? Stand firm and work hard. Sounds like it's just keep going and do some church work. But the context of how badly they are doing at those things elsewhere, the examples, plus the rest of chapter 15 and what it says about life and death, means that actually I think we've got to read chapter 15 as about sacrifice. And verses 29 to 34 particularly put us in a life and death, martyrdom context. And the costs in chapter 16 as well put us there. And Luke Cornelius found some shocking statistics for our SLOB group, and I wonder if maybe some of them have appeared in other groups, about belief in what happens after you die. So this was a UK survey only 3 years ago. 44% of the UK believes that in the resurrection of Jesus from the dead, and 93% of active Christians believe that Jesus rose. 46%, slightly more, of the UK believes in life after death, and 85%, slightly less, of active Christians believe in that. But the really interesting one was when you ask active Christians to choose all the options that express what life after death is like. Active Christians. 16% choose reincarnation, 2% that you become a ghost, 6% choose different versions of I don't know. No active Christians chose rapture, judgment day, Armageddon. No active Christians chose resurrection, second coming of Christ. And 1% chose a bodily physical existence in another world. And the massively winning answer was another life where your soul lives on, e.g. heaven, hell. And that got 86% of active Christians. Now, you might want to ask those questions differently. You might want to say maybe people didn't understand the question, but the overlap with Corinth is really striking, isn't it? Do you believe that Jesus was raised? Yes, 93%. Do you believe in a life after death? Yes, 85%. Do you think that life will be for your soul or for your body? 1% body and 86% plus another life where your soul lives on. And that matches my experience. For that to be the views of active Christians, that fits well with my experience. 1 Corinthians 15 has become the chapter I get asked to go and speak on in different places. I don't know why really, but I have spoken on it a lot in a lot of different places over the last 10, 15 years. And I tell people what it says and what I think Paul says really clearly here. It's what the creeds say as well. Christians believe in the resurrection of the body. And Christians believe that as an essential thing of first importance in the faith. And if you don't believe that, the resurrection of the body, then you are not an apostolic orthodox Christian. And the reason that that truth is so important becomes clear the moment you illustrate what it actually means for our lives. So just taking out what I think is the main strand of application here, there are others. Follow me through the steps. If the future is a bodily resurrection, then the bodily life that you have now is not your only shot at life with a body. And if the bodily resurrection is certain, then you can make confident decisions now based on the fact that you will have a body in the future. And if the body that you will have is the body that Jesus offers us, then that is an unimaginably better body than the one you have now, which means that this body and this life is the spare. And a number of you have heard me say this before. I illustrated this on a Central Focus weekend a few years ago with an illustration about which phone you take to the beach. You have your real phone, don't you? Your proper phone, the one you are given by work or the one you bought at enormous expense and are still paying off. And then you have your spare phone. And I have a Nokia that is a sort of Tesco mobile, cheapy phone, pay as you go. And which one do I take to the beach? Which one do I take kayaking? I take the Nokia kayaking because it's good to have a phone when you're kayaking. I can check the weather and I can speak to Claire from 10 miles offshore and I can call 999 if I get in trouble. It's a good phone, the Nokia. I'm not anti the spare phone. I don't hate the spare phone. But I am willing to risk it. In big waves or in surf landings on steep beaches. It goes in a pocket here, in the chest, and it goes in a cheap freezer bag only. And one day, the risk I take with it will destroy it. That phone is going to get destroyed at some point. But that's okay because it is the spare phone. And the real phone, the one with the contacts and the photos and the apps and the Zoom capability, that is safe and secure. That phone is far, far better than the Nokia Tesco Mobile, and it is completely secure and safe. Now, that illustration has horrified keen Christians all over the world, literally, when I've explained it to them. When I've said the life that you live now is your spare life. This is not your only shot at life with a body. And the body that Jesus will certainly give you in the future is a far, far better body than this one. Again, do you hear what I'm not saying? This body is good. This life is good. Paul, he is not anti the spare life. But we should be willing to risk it. And to sacrifice comfort and money, chapter 16, and sex and rights and pride and status and freedom and giftedness and life itself. I am in danger every day. I die every day. We should be willing to sacrifice if the sacrifice is part of the incredible work of the Lord of getting this indestructible life to people who would otherwise be dead. Now, we're going to spend our last few minutes in a feedback time, a question time, and I'd be most interested in two types of feedback, particularly. One would be questions about whether Paul really teaches sacrifice. And please say if you are not convinced, because it affects whether you will put into practice the whole rest of the letter. And then the other area is examples that you have discussed in your groups about where sacrifice now for the sake of Christ's body really bites for you personally or for others at St. Helens. So those two areas, questions or examples of where it bites, is where we'll go in just a couple of minutes' time. Thank you.